What up? Welcome to another episode of the Dealer Talk Podcast. This is your host, Herb Anderson. Thank you so much for tuning in. In today's session, we have an amazing, amazing guest. We've had him on the show before, so he's no stranger to the show. Had a really good conversation for season three. I had a lot of positive feedback. And so I'm very excited to welcome back to the show, Mr. Jeff Cowan. Jeff, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
Well, thank you very much for having me back on the show. I love doing it. Good seeing you and all that stuff. So thank you for the invite. And I gotta tell you, before we get started, you're looking really sharp today.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
I feel a little underdressed. I'm in Green Bay preparing for a workshop tomorrow, so I don't have a suit on, but you look really sharp, man.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, you know, it's one of those sessions where we got to make this deal happen. So I'm at the dealership right now, but we're going to make this thing happen today. So,
all right.
Dude, so I know you already gave us a recap, so we're not going to go down that path. But just if we can recap anything, 2019, big year for service in a lot of different ways. I saw a lot of social media push for it. You know, Teddings with a roundtable event. All the dealers that I consult with are really paying attention to service. Sure. What is your take, man?
For 2019 or what's going to happen in 2020?
No, just kind of how you saw service evolve in 2019. And then obviously let's take that into the future, right?
Sure. Well, in 2019, what I saw happen is just what you just said. You know, people started paying attention to it because I think, and this is my opinion, but I think the industry has finally realized that this big reset they were waiting on, where people just, you know, flooded the doors and bought all kinds of cars, already happened 5 or 6 years ago. So what you've got is what you've got. Now, it doesn't mean that we're not going to continue to sell cars, and it doesn't mean that we might even sell a few more in the 2020 season. But what it does mean is that people understand this is what we've got. Service is where you make your money, and so they're finally starting to focus on it. And the other, which is good, and I think what's brought their attention around is that they're finally coming around to understand that it's not the technology and the software programs and that type of stuff that's going to get them where they want to go. You know, technology, software programs, those things are good, but I think they're finally realizing that those things won't do anything to sell service. They will help you become more efficient. But if you really want to be the best, you've got to invest in your people. So I think that's the big change I saw is again, they realized that, you know, it's not going to fix itself and that it's really the people that we have working for us that are going to make the difference. That's the big change that I saw.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And you know, having a service background, I'm really excited because I think that, you know, I've always said that the service department is the long-term success strategy for the dealership.
Yes.
Not just because of the money that it generates. Obviously, that's a big part of it. But also, there's a lot of deals, car deals in service that, you know, we don't pay attention to when things are good in the front of the house, right? It's when things start to slow down that we really start to look at service as, hey, you know, we can actually make some car deals out of this part of the business. I mean, do you agree with that?
Oh, I totally agree with that. You know, I've been involved in several programs and I want to let you know, this is at least a 24 month old statistic. So it's 2 years old, but, we discovered that this last time I did a survey on it, but we discovered that on any given day, one in about 20 people would trade their car if approached right on a service drive. So that means, obviously, if you've got 60 people coming across your service drive, there's a potential for 3 car sales there, one way or the other. Okay, so yeah, I think that as far as just pulling business off the service drive every morning, having a salesperson out there from the sales floor as a meter greeter is a good way to do it. But I also think there's another big way that a lot of people have missed, and that's simply this, and that's because, again, things have changed. And that is, if you want to sell more cars, which every dealership wants to do, if you want to sell more cars, sell more service. The old axiom used to be, if you sold too much service, then people would run away from you and they would leave and they would never come back. But today it's the exact opposite, because people are holding on their cars longer. So they're going to car dealerships longer to get the service. So here's the thinking behind it. If a customer comes in and you don't offer them what they need, you don't sell them what they need for the car, they don't do the maintenance or they don't do the repair, then everybody knows the car is not going to run as well. It's not going to be as efficient. It's not going to be as reliable. It's not going to be as enjoyable to drive. So when that happens, the customer then, by not doing the work, you get a bad survey score, your retention drops off because their car is running bad, and then 100,000 miles in, which is when people tend to trade their cars these days, 100,000 miles in, when it comes time to trade it, they look back over that 100,000 miles and say, you know, the salesperson told me that if I bought this car, that it would cost me almost nothing to drive it. It would last a long time and be efficient, and it hasn't been. You know, just the last couple of years alone, I've had to put a couple $1,000s into it just to keep the thing running. Now, they're never going to blame it on themselves if they're not doing the stuff. Right. They're going to blame it on the car. But on the flip side, if a customer comes in and you groom them and you train them to buy service and repair from you as they need it, because we don't want to push anything on anybody or sell them stuff they don't need, but if they buy the preventative maintenance, they buy the repairs, then the car runs better. It's more efficient, it's more reliable, and it's more fun to drive. If it's more fun to drive, then you have a happier customer. Happier customers give you perfect survey scores. Happy customers come back, giving you the customer retention, and happy customers at 100,000 miles look back over that time and say, you know, salesperson told me if I did the maintenance on this car and did the repairs I was supposed to, it would last me for 100,000 miles with little to no trouble. That's exactly what happened. So I'm going to go back to that dealership and buy another car. So if you want to sell more service, you know, sell more cars. And that's one of the things that I think that general managers and dealers are starting to realize, and even manufacturers, that that's the key. That's the reason everybody's so focused on the customer retention.
Yeah, man, and I'm so glad that you kind of brought up that point, because that was one of the things that I wanted to talk to you. Obviously, retention is one of those things that I've been hearing a lot about. A lot of the manufacturers started to change the way that they measure retention, and there's all this thing. I mean, retention's always been the game, right? For anybody that's been in service, that's always been the game. Like, that's nothing new to us. But kind of like the focus on retention is, you know, I saw it in 2019 become more from the manufacturer down.
Right.
But a lot of the things that I was hearing and the way that they were measuring doesn't really jive with where we are right now. Some of the manufacturers had, requirements of 2 visits per year, sort of a deal. And then you take into consideration the longer cycles that we have, like 10,000 miles and things of that nature. I mean, how realistic do you think that is in how things are set up today? You know, is that realistic to expect those 2 visits in a shorter amount of time?
No, I think the big mistake is we're letting these people wait 10,000 miles to bring in their car. All right. And it's causing problems. And I'm a perfect example of that. And I rarely like to give personal examples, but it happened to me. And not only has it happened to me, it's happened to a bunch of my friends, because, you know, me being in the business that I'm in, it's natural for my friends and family to ask me questions about cars and service and all that stuff, right? Well, so let's take example, me and the wife. We both get a car at the same time, and we're told, don't come in until the light goes off or 10,000 miles. And I even made the point when they're selling it to me, well, this has a soft compound tire. Are you sure that's okay? No, this is different. This brand, you don't have to do that. Trust us, Mr. Cowan. You come in when the light goes off or at 10,000 miles. So I go in at 10,000 miles, and guess what they tell me I need? And I'm so mad at myself, because I'm smarter than this. I'm in the business, but I wait till 10,000 miles, and guess what they tell me I need when I get in there? New tires. Why? Because the old ones are eaten up. So my point is forget the manufacturers. They've never stood on a service drive. Forget this 10,000 mile stuff. Forget these light things, and get those customers in once every 5,000 miles, if for nothing else, to rotate the tires. Now, it's easy to get them to do that, because there's a couple things you can do. Number one, when you sell the car, obviously, you know, make it part of the F&I checklist. Hey, Mr. Customer, you know, you got a great car here. You shouldn't have any problems with it. People who invest in these vehicles always come back and invest some more. So you're going to love this car. But it's very important in the first 500 to 1,000 miles, we schedule your time to come into our service department and just take a look at it, make sure everything's going fine. Because if they're, you know, going fine. Now, you don't have to do this, but I like this idea, because what I do if I get them in at 500 to 1,000, the customer's still excited about the car. It gives me, there's really no service to be done, so it gives me, as the advisor, all the opportunity to sell them on, this is why you want to come here. Okay, this is what we're going to do. This is how you're going to work with your car. This is how you're going to take care of it. And then the next thing I'm going to do is tell them they need to come back at 5,000 miles, even though the manufacturer comes back every 10,000 miles. That's what they're talking about is the drivetrain, the engine, and that type of stuff. But there's other components that could wear out and be affected sooner than that. For example, at 5,000 miles, we recommend you rotate tires, and we do that here. When we come in, we're not only going to rotate the tire, but we're going to also do a quick visual inspection, whatever. So I think right out of the gate, you start to groom the customer to come in at 5,000 miles if for nothing else than the tires. You know what I mean? So there's a reason to bring them in. And so on that metric, what I recommend is if you can get a customer to come in three times in a row, you know, and if you're doing it every 5,000 miles, that'd be about 2 to 3 times a year. Then you've probably got them forever. You know what I mean? That's what our stuff has told them. And I don't know necessarily believe they have to come in three times inside of a 12-month period, although, you know, you're hitting that mark. It could be 12 months, could be 14, could be 10. But that's the metric I would follow. And I would stop listening to, again, repeating myself, the manufacturers. If you don't mind, by the way, if I talk too much, just tell me.
No.
Another way to do this, so that everybody feels legit with it, even though it's legit, is just sit down with your technicians and sit down with your service advisors and say, look, you know, the guide that the manufacturers come up with is just that. It's a guideline. It's the same one they give every car that's sold in the United States of America, all 50 states, including Alaska, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico. All right. So my point is the way you take care of a car in Bangor, Maine, and the way you take care of a car in Las Vegas, Nevada, where you are, is totally different. I mean, because of the weather alone, right? So you sit down with your advisors, you sit down with your technicians, you say, look, over the next 2 years, or two weeks, I'm sorry, take a look at what the manufacturer is recommending. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to and look at the cars we're working on. And in 2 weeks, we're going to have another meeting. And I want you to sit down with me and I want you to tell me either we need to stick exactly with what they're doing, we need to accelerate some of the things they're doing, meaning we're going to do it sooner, or we need to decelerate because it's not needed that soon. Now, when you come back and you make a suggestion, you can't just make a suggestion because you want to sell it. You have to give me some legitimate reasons for doing it, especially if we're going to accelerate some of these services, like a tire rotation, for example. But once you do, we're going to create a menu from that. And then there you go. And it's real easy. And what I would tell every single customer is, Mr. Customer, every time you come in here, one of the things we're going to talk about is how to make sure that your car stays showroom new, efficient, reliable, economically sound, and the like. One of the ways to do that, as you know, is through preventative maintenance. Mm-hmm. And every time you come in, we're going to talk about that. And you're going to be given two options. One is, if you plan on trading the car every 12 months or so, then I would stick with the manufacturer's guidelines because as long as you do that, your warranty remains in effect. But if you plan on keeping the car for any length of time and or you just want to make sure it's efficient as possible regardless of when you trade it in, then I'd recommend you take a look at the second schedule we come up with. And it was developed by our factory trained technicians who work on vehicles like yours every day that drive on the same streets in the same conditions you do. The guideline that the manufacturer uses is one they use for all 50 states. And as you know, the way you take care of a car in the desert of Las Vegas is way different than you take care of it in Green Bay, Wisconsin. You know, one city it gets down to zero and you know, 20 below. The other one, it goes up to 120. So it's two different ways. So again, based on what we're seeing here, you'll always be offered the second thing, the second menu. We recommend you go by that because it's going to make sure your car stays as close to showroom new as possible, is efficient, economically sound, and reliable for you. And you bring them in every 5,000 miles. You know, I mean, that's exactly what I would do. It's legitimate and it's based on fact. And it gets you the trifecta, more than a trifecta because there's 5 points here. Yeah. It gets the retention, it gets you the survey score, it allows you to sell to the customer what they need. You have a happier customer that likes their car, and a customer comes back and buys another one.
Yeah, you know, that's a very interesting point, man. I mean, I guess I never looked at it that way, right? Because when I was doing it, I was focused on my area, right? I was in Michigan. Sure. So, you know, we went through the season sort of a deal, and I just focused on that. But, you know, it's a totally different thing if you are in a different climate. And I think that that's a great way to present that to customers and get them to, you know, kind of see the reasonings, right? Like, why do I have, you know what I mean?
I'll never forget one time, and this is going back a few years, but I'll never forget the first time that I started working in Phoenix, Arizona. Great car market, work with there a lot with a lot of the dealers over the years. And it was always amazing to me how the batteries, the heat would just kill the batteries in the cars. Right. I mean, just killed it. And so it was just so that little speech I just gave you, that little word track, was very easy to do because, you know, in Phoenix, you had a lot of snowbirds, what they call snowbirds. People came out mm-hmm. of Minnesota and the cold states in the winter. And they understood what you're talking about. They go, oh, yeah, you know, we bring the car down here and, we go through a battery every 12 to 18 months. We're up in Minnesota, you know, they last for 3 or 4 years. So we get it. You have to take care of them different. So when I'm here in the desert, what do you recommend? And they were open to that, you know what I mean? And they welcomed that. And it made you look smarter because it made it look like you had your, you know, your head where it should be, and which is taking care of them to the best way.
Right. What about the cadence of communication and the methods, right? Because that's a big one. Obviously, you know, man, Jeff, I can't tell you how many times I start consulting with the dealership and I look and they have their manufacturer program or whatever program they have to communicate with customers. Right. Then the GM or the GSM put in 2-3 different programs in place that's doing the right. exact same thing. And now you have like all this communication going out about the same exact stuff, but it all looks different. It has different messaging. It's just a mess, right? And so right. we're inundating the customer so much to the point where they're just, you know, tuned out completely. What is a good cadence of communication when it comes to service reminders and things like that, in your opinion?
So when you're asking, let me make sure I'm clear what you're asking. So when you say service reminders, you're talking service reminders to get the customer to come back in, or service mm-hmm. reminders throughout the day, this is what's going on with your car.
Yeah, just to kind of follow their ownership journey, if you will, right? So every time they need a scheduled maintenance service.
Yeah, you know, as usual, what the car industry has done with service is they've overthought it, you know, and they're guessing at what customers want. And so the key, I think it's real simple. I would, number one, I would ask the customer, look, we're going to send you notices on your vehicle. It's important you get these notices because our goal is to make sure this car lasts as long as you want it to last, being as efficient, economically sound, and reliable as possible. So let me just ask you, what's the best way to contact you to give you these updates so you know when to come in? And then I'd let them answer. And you're going to be stunned when you do this, because you're going to have quite a few people say text. You're gonna have quite a few people say call me, and you're gonna have quite a few people just say send me an email or mail me something. But whatever the method is that you choose, because you don't want to use all four, you know, with one customer, you want to use one or the other to suit what this exact customer wants to get the biggest hit. All of those would be just a method to get the customer on the phone. All right, Mr. Customer, I just wanted to send you this quick text as a reminder that your vehicle needs some preventative maintenance or repairs done at the dealership. When you get a chance in the next 36 hours, it's very important that you call me at this number. And Mr. Customer, I just want to send you this email to remind you that you've got some upcoming maintenance that is due. It's very important that you call us at the dealership within 24, 48 hours, whatever you're comfortable with, 72 hours, and talk to us. Now, notice I keep going back to call us. Why? Because if you just send them what they need, then you know, there's really no need for them to call you. But if you call and tell them, you know, call us so we can tell you what you need and get you scheduled, there's a bigger chance that they call. When they call in, now you got a bigger shot of getting them to come back in. And this is my big caution here, and I'm sure I'll say this a couple more times before we're through here today, and that's the industry keeps driving the customer and the service advisor, service team apart. They want them to do everything through texting and online and all that stuff. And what you really want to do, if you're smart, is get the customer to talk. You know, 86% of all sales that are made in the United States of America on a daily basis still require face-to-face contact or voice-to-voice mm-hmm. contact. We're in that segment, okay? Yeah. There's only 14% of the companies out there that have a product where no human interaction is required for you to make a purchase on that product. So you want to train your people to be able to talk to these people when they come in and get them sold on coming back in. That's my thoughts.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I loved what you said about how we overthink it. And I'll share a quick story. So I had a dealer that I was consulting with in Yuba City, right? And maybe it's just because it's a single point store, I don't know, but they didn't do any type of communication. They treated it like a dentist appointment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So they would send their customers like an actual postcard, like handwritten sort of a deal when their appointments were due. I mean, obviously their processes prior to that appointment was pretty good. Sure. Because they would pre-schedule that. But they just send a handwritten postcard. And it was insane, like the return on that when you compare that to mailers and things of that nature.
There you go.
You know what I mean? And it's just, if you just preset it and you tell the customer what to expect, like you're explaining, and you ask them, you know, or you just tell them, hey, you're going to get this postcard before your meeting or whatever, you know, make sure to look out for that. I think it just goes out a long way. And it will save the dealership a ton of money on marketing efforts. B, I think that it will keep that expectation with the customer on what kind of like the next step is for their next visit, sort of a deal. And you know, as long as you don't fumble that interaction when that customer is there, and you know, then I feel like you're going to get that customer to come back. You know what I mean?
So. Absolute best way to do it. I mean, and this is the hardest thing to get dealerships to invest. It's almost like, you know, I think they would believe it if I said, look, I'm going to set up a postcard program for you and I'm going to bang your credit card for $15,000 a month. Then I think they would buy it because they tend to want to pay ridiculous amount of money. That simple stuff. And I'm so happy to hear you say that, because let me tell you what one of my most famous word tracks is. Okay, it's exactly what you just said, because the postcard. Now the comment I want to make about the postcard is it's important. I don't know if they did it at the place you're at or not, but it's important. Oh, we got something popping up here. That the postcard, if possible, is a bright fluorescent color, so people really see mm-hmm. it when they open. Box. So we got like a bright pink, a bright yellow, bright green. But here's a word track for you that I recommend every single service advisor use at the when they deliver a vehicle back to the customer. This will get you an instant 50% customer retention, 50%, I mean instantly. And then the second time you do it, over 65%, third time moving on, 80-85%. And I've got documents to prove this for the last 20 years. Okay, so the customer picks up their vehicle, you deliver it back to them, you tell them what you did, what you didn't do, and then the last thing you say before they drive away is something like this: hey, Mr. Customer, I want you to take this with you. You'll recognize this as the menu preventative maintenance schedule we were using this morning when riding up your vehicle. Now, time out. We still... You know, everybody wants all this electronic stuff, but there's still a need for a hand-printed menu. It doesn't have to be expensive, but one you can hand to the customer right there. I want you to take this with you because you're going to notice where I circled the line that says blank amount of miles. I circled that because I want you to know when you'll be due to come back in. It'll be at that mileage. I want you to know what we're going to be doing when you come back in, how much time that's going to take. That's a service that takes the better part of the day, so plan on leaving your vehicle with us today. And I also wanted you to know what your participation is going to be. What I've noticed is that you're putting somewhere in the vicinity of about 2,000 miles a month on your vehicle, or 1,000 miles a month on your vehicle. And that being the case, that means today, what is it, January, you could be due to come back in February, March, April, May, June. So we're going to schedule you for June, because here's what's going to happen from this point forward. I'm going to schedule you for June. Today's a Tuesday, so I'm assuming Tuesdays work best for you. Okay, and you came in this morning at 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock worked best for you. Well, I'm going to put you down then for Tuesday, June 17th at 8 o'clock in the morning to come back and get the service. Here's what's going to happen from this point. About 2 weeks prior to that time coming up, you're going to get a little postcard from us here at the service center reminding you of this check-in time for that service. 2 days prior to that check-in time, you'll get a phone call from somebody here at the service department, maybe even me, reminding you to get of that service. For any time between now and June 17th at 8 o'clock in the morning, you find that doesn't work for you, give me a call. We'll move it up. We'll move it back, whatever works best for you. But if we don't hear from you, we'll just assume that you'll be coming in again on June 17th, which is a Tuesday, 8 o'clock in the morning. Fair enough? Great. That right there will get you an instant 50% of those people will instantly show up. So now you wake up in June, you got half your paycheck made, right?
Right.
You do it a second time with the same customers, it jumps to 65%. You do it a third time with the same customers, it jumps to 80% and never goes away. Why? Because of what you said 5 minutes ago. It's because now you're treating them like a professional organization, like the dentist office, like the doctor, like the hairstylist, like all of those, like your lawyers, like everybody does. And the customers eat it up. Because I think I said this last time, it's never been easier to sell a customer service than it is right now, because simply because when their car needs something, they Google it, they read it online, they want to get these services done. They're keeping these cars longer than they ever have. They see service as an investment, and they're looking for somebody that's going to help them protect this investment. And the way to do that is to be proactive. And that's what that last word track, by the way, is called. It's called the proactive next visit. You know, we don't only tell them what they're going to need, but we invite them back in through postcards and phone calls.
Yeah, no, I love that. I mean, it's simple, but it makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like you said, man, it's just so true. We just complicate this deal, you know? And on that note, how much has technology played a part in that? You know what I mean? Because now you got all these, and it's weird because I'm a marketing guy, right? That's right. What I do, right? But it's weird for me to say this, but it's how I feel, right? Like, we have all these marketing companies going to dealerships like, oh, buy this widget, like this automatic communication. Now you have AI that's supposed to talk to your service customers, you know, and just kind of constantly go, right? Like, how much of that stuff is really a part of the problem? You know what I mean?
It's a big part of the problem. You know, there's I'm sure I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings when they listen to this, but there's a company out there that's developed, for example, for lack of better description, it's an ATM. What's the word? It's a kiosk. Thank you very much. Yeah, kiosk for service advisors. And there's a couple of manufacturers that want to use this for the first visit for a customer. Now, come on. I mean, it's dead on arrival. Would I get one of those as a dealership? Yeah, I'd use it for night drops. I'd use it for early bird. I would use it for delivering a car after hours so somebody can't get there until 10 o'clock in the evening to pick up their car. But, I mean, what do you think is going to happen when a customer comes in and they've got this machine, and the machine says, hey, you're here for this service. We have three options. We have this one for $99, this one for $199, this one for $299. Which button do you think they're going to pick? And the two manufacturers, by the way, that are using this this is what we're going to do. We're going to make it convenient for our customers, so when they come back in, the first visit, they're going to walk over this kiosk, and they don't even have to talk to anybody. So let me get this straight. You just spent how many thousands of dollars to get them to walk in the front door to buy the car. They bought this car. Major investment for them. You gave them free coffee, free internet. You got beautiful showroom, all that stuff. And then you're going to throw it all away and let them talk to a machine the first 2-3 years they come back in. I mean, how's that going to work? It's dead on arrival. You know?
Yeah, you don't want the customer to have no interaction with anybody at the dealership.
And these people, the only people making money off these things are the people developing them. I mean, it's a big problem. The dealership, if I was going to give you one piece of advice, anybody listen to this, it's service advisor, service manager, dealer principal, general manager. The dealership that's going to be the most successful in fixed operations today and moving forward is the one who trains their people to communicate with their people and then sets up systems that forces your advisors to communicate eyeball to eyeball or voice to voice. Technology is great. It will make you more efficient. It will probably save a few trees. But we're in an industry that still requires you talk to people. And the more you train your people to talk to them the right way, the more successful you're going to be. Just like you said a second ago, that postcard is it's beautiful. You know what I mean? It's beautiful. I'm not surprised at all to hear that you say that it worked. It's not overcomplicated.
Exactly. So
here's what we should do. Maybe you and I should create an artificial intelligence program that generates postcards.
There you go.
To people.
It mails them.
We'll get a booth at NADA, sell a few million dollars worth, and head to Hawaii.
Yeah, right out into the sunset. I like that idea. So how much, you know, kind of continuing your thought there for a second, how much of that, how do I say this? So when we're talking to principals now, right, and they're looking at our fixed op departments and they're looking at dollars and cents, right, because that's why the kiosk is appealing, because it can remove people from the payroll, which is going to save them money and all this stuff.
Right.
How much more money would that generate if you took that money and you spent it on like you said, maybe communication courses or ongoing training for your staff to have better communication with the people that are actually there to service their cars?
Oh, I think it's a no-brainer. I mean, I think it would pay high dividends. Now, the pushback when you get that is, well, you know, we trained our people, but we can't get them to use the word track, or we trained our people, and you know, they did. Well. Here's the thing. Again, at the risk of sounding harsh, they don't get to make that decision. You sign their check. So by them accepting that check, they've agreed to follow your lead. Now, leaders that are good are going to lead you places a lot of times that you want to go, that you're excited about to be good, but occasionally going to lead you to a place that you may not think is good, but they're leading you there because they know, because they're the leader, they're making decisions based on information you probably don't have, right? That you just have to trust that they're leading you down the right path. Okay, so it's leadership, and then it's holding people accountable. I don't understand. This is one of my biggest pet peeves after 32 years. I don't understand why dealer principals. I'm going to lay this in your lap, dealers, because it's your fault. Why would you not hold your people accountable to memorizing some word tracks and doing things like walking around cars, things that have been proven 1,000 times over that's going to benefit everything you've got. Yeah. Why would you allow them to dictate to you when they tell you, I don't want to walk around cars, when they tell you, I'm not going to use this word track, when they tell you anything like that? Why would you let that one service advisor dictate to you as a business owner how successful you're going to be and how much money you're going to make, and at the same time ruin it for the other 100 employees you have? I mean, I don't get that. You tell them this is what you want. You don't have to be mean. You tell them this is what you want, this is how we want it done, and this is the results we expect to get. And if you want to do that, you get to sit in the chair. If you don't want to, well, guess what? It's your lucky day. We need a new parts driver.
Yeah, exactly. That's just the way to put it. But you know what?
Because they allow it on the front end. I mean, hey, if you have a brand new salesperson and he's been there for 90 days and he sells two cars a month, how many more months does he have?
Right, exactly. But what happens, that's the thing, Jeff. And listen, I was guilty of this too, but you get a guy that's really, really good, right, on the numbers side of things. And then you're like, oh, well, I mean, but that bad apple does mess everything else up, because then everybody looks at him and there's like, well, he gets to do it sort of a deal. And it's like, how do you, you know what I mean? You're absolutely correct.
It takes guts to lead, and it takes guts to hold people accountable. But you know, it just gets down to how successful you want to be. I mean, if you want to be an also ran, you want to be okay, you want to walk into a dealer 20 meeting and you're not the worst one, but you're not the best one, you're not the top of the list in your district with survey scores, but you're not the bottom, you know, the region stays off your back because in a sense, you know, using a metaphor, you're an eight unit a month guy, all right, in service, where you're selling just enough to get noticed, but not too few to get in trouble, then have at it. Your name's on the sign. But if you want to lead, and you want to lead from the front, and then you have to do that. And part of that is that you look for a system that's been proven, and you hold your people accountable to getting it done for you. And if they want to do it, fine. If they don't, we'll find somebody that will.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that I realized once I changed my perspective on that, on the topic, was that eventually, by removing that person, everybody else got better. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure they do. Sure they do. You know, I experienced that in my business. I'm embarrassed to admit that, you know, but there was a time when I first started my business, I let people come in and sell for me and be trainers, and I thought they were my family and I was okay with them. But we didn't really get good and get noticed until one day I just had enough and said, you know what, I'm working too hard to let you dictate because I, you know, this is what's going to work. We're not going to do what you think is going to work. We're going to do what I know works. And if you want to work here and sit in that chair and do that, I'll pay you well. If you don't want to do it, then you can't stay. And I had a number one salesperson that I had to cut loose, and I had two trainers that thought they knew everything, and I had to cut loose. And as soon as I did that, everybody else stepped up their game, and that's when we really took off.
Yeah, no, it's just the way that it goes, for sure. So moving things along here, I wanted to talk to you about one area that I got a lot of feedback from our first interview, and that was the customer, understanding the customer of today.
Sure.
So if we could talk more about that, that's definitely something that I'd want to revisit with you.
Well, you know, tell me how you'd like me to add to it. But, you know, to get started, I believe what I said was this, is it's never been easier, to sell a customer on a service drive than it is today. Never been easier to get perfect survey scores, high effective labor rate, high sales, customer retention. And it's never been easier to have no heat or disgruntled customers on your drive than it is right now. And the reason I say that is because of this one principle. The story I like to tell is this. Let's say that you go home tonight and you decide you want to buy a new TV, right? All right, so or you're going to buy a new product or service. It doesn't make any difference. You're going to buy a new product or service. Before you ever leave your home, what do? You Google it. right? And the reason you Google is you want to hear what people are saying about the product, where it is to go buy it, what's the right product, what should I do when I get the product, what should I buy with the product, and all that stuff. So when you go into the place online that they've convinced you it's the place to go, you're armed and ready, right? Well, guess what? Here's what everybody's missing. Again, so do your customers. I don't care how long they've come to you, but if they wake up this morning knowing that they need a preventative maintenance or repair, they Google it. And when they Google it, they're typically led to one of the five major blogs that are written by master technicians online. And on those blogs, here's what they'll be told. What you need for your vehicle is easy. It's not going to take a lot of time, not going to cost a lot of money, might even be free because it could be covered under warranty. But in the same blog, they'll be told that what you're looking at could be a very big concern that takes a lot of time and takes a lot of money. And oh, based on the mileage you have, don't be surprised when you get there if they don't tell you you need this, this, and this, because you do. So now they know what they need, how long it's going to take, and what it's going to cost. They then Google who does that. And this is where it gets interesting, because on average, there will be 9 opportunities pull up on the first page alone that they could select, but they pick where they go. They pick you. So what's my point? My point is that when they get there, they're already sold. They know how long it's going to take, about what it's going to cost, and how much time it's going to take, and the thing. They're already sold. Where just 10 years ago, 11 years ago, the way they decided to do business with you is they had to get in their car and drive down the street, and depending on where your business was placed, what it looked like and was written on the sign would largely determine whether or not they'd give you a shot at doing business. If they give you a shot, you had about 10 minutes to convince them that you could handle what they came in for. But today when they get there, they're already sold. Never been easier. Now I want to take it a step further. And this is a trick question. And somebody answers it about once every 18 months. But the question is what's the number one question that a customer has once they do arrive after they've Googled you? Now, most people say, well, how long is it going to take? They already know that. What's it going to cost? They already know that. What's the concern? They pretty much have a good idea. Their biggest question is, do you know as much about my vehicle as I believe I do? Now, this is key, because this is what's costing people their service customers. What do I mean? Let's say you're looking for a new TV. And so you Google it and you find that the 60-inch Samsung is the latest, greatest, best thing for you. And so everybody says that. But every site you visit that says it's a great TV out of the box, but if you really want to get the maximum picture, add 3 million pixels to the picture, you want to add sound to it, get gold-tipped HDMI cables, they're $100. Everybody tells you that. So you get in your car, you go to the first store, you walk in, and the first two or three stores, and nobody's talking about gold-tipped HDMI cables. What's right. Your opinion of that salesperson? They don't know what they're talking about.
They don't know what they're talking about, yeah.
All right, so their biggest question they walk in the front door is, do you know as much as I do about my car? And here's the proof, because what happens is most service advisors talk their customers out of what they came in to buy. You know, I work here, you really don't have to do that. Or, you know, the technician gave me this list, let's do the most important things and have you come back. When the customer said, well, why are you doing that? Because everybody online said I should have it done now. My car's not going to run right if it doesn't. I mean, what? Right there. Yeah, this customer has never been easier to sell. I mean, if you're, and I'll just put it out there, I don't care where your dealership's located. I don't care what the manufacturer is. I don't care if you have a service drive or you're writing the stuff up out in the parking lot. It doesn't make any difference, big store, small store. If you're not making $100,000 a year writing service at a car dealership today and you've been there for 18 months, you're doing something wrong. It's a $100,000 a year job.
Yeah, for sure. What about, how does the CSI play into this, right? Because that's obviously a big portion. Do you think it's realistic, unrealistic, the way that the manufacturer set that up?
It's okay. I think the problem I've always had with CSI is I think it's important to survey your customers, but we've gotten again off track on why you survey customers. You don't survey customers to have them tell you you're great. Okay, you survey your customers so they can tell you why you're not, so you can fix it, you know? Mm-hmm. So we beat people up too much with it. And I think it's worded sometimes to not be very fair. But that aside, they do ask the questions and we have to work within it. So the best thing to do to get these numbers that you need to get, the higher survey scores, is just take control again of the customer and don't let them tell you how things are going to go. You set the expectation. For example, if you know somebody's coming in and what they're looking at today is going to take all day to get taken care of, don't ask them when they want the car back. Don't ask them what their thought, because it doesn't make any difference. It's like going to Ruth Chris and getting a $75 steak and telling the guy, I want you to fix it in 5 minutes and it still tastes as good. It's impossible. They're never going to ask you how quick you want your steak. They're going to tell you, okay, great, we took your order, we'll have it back here in 25 minutes. Why? Because that's what it takes to fix one. So that's what we're going to do with these customers. You know what I mean? Mr. Customer, take a look at what you came in here for today. I want to tell you, you're smart for coming here, because nobody can handle these type of concerns better than us. We're literally the best in the business. Let me just tell you how this thing's going to roll. About 50% of the time, we're able to get things like this diagnosed, repaired, and back to you by the end of the day. So time out. What do I have right there? All day. All that right. Said, sometimes we get in there and find that we don't have a needed part in stock, or that it's going to take a little bit longer than we thought, which may require that we keep the vehicle overnight. Time out. What do I have now? Tomorrow. In even rare instances, if a part's not in stock or it's on back order, it may require that we keep the vehicle for several days until we get the report. Time out. I now have it for several days. Or that you pick it up and bring it back when the part arrives. Unfortunately, we'll know where we stand until our factory trained technicians get the vehicle in the state-of-the-art shop and get it diagnosed, and I give you a call back. All right. So time is irrelevant. So what I just get, I just got 3 or 4 days.
But all right. how important is it for us to set that up, to make that customer feel, you know, and this is a recurring theme on the podcast this season, and I'd love to get your take on it. But one of my thoughts has been, like, if we give that customer in that first interaction, right, and we make them feel good and we do everything professional and we set everything up like you're saying right now, how much more forgiving is that customer going to be as we go through the process and things come up, right, unexpectedly? Like, we find something that we didn't diagnose originally, like you said, the parts on back order and we can't get it. Doesn't it change that whole, you know, dynamic?
Hey, look on that promise time alone. On that promise time alone, yeah, I just said that was for something I was pretty sure I could get done in a day. So if I call them up at 3 o'clock and say, hey, got great news for you. Got in there. We got like I told you earlier, we got it diagnosed. This is what the concern was. Part got here. We were able to get your car in front of a few others. We got it taken care of, put together. When would you like to come back and pick it up today? Would 4 be okay or 4:15? What am I? A hero. Why? Because they were planning on 2 or 3 days. If I call them and say, hey, look, got in there, got this diagnosed. The technician did say it's a little bit more severe than he was anticipating. So it's going to be tomorrow afternoon before we're able to get the part here and get put on, so be looking at tomorrow night. They can't get mad. Why? Because I told them several hours ago that we might have it overnight. So They're very forgiving because we set it up. Now, it doesn't mean when you tell somebody like that they may not push back for a second. They might say, do you really think you're going to have my car overnight or for a few days? And what you do is you stay strong and say, I think it's a good possibility. So I'd rather you plan on that and set your schedule around that. So if it happens, got a plan. But if it doesn't happen, then everything works out fine. You get your car back sooner. But as I'm standing here right now, I can tell you that it's going to be something that I won't know for a few hours how long it's going to be, but it could be something that's end of the day, tomorrow, or a few days from now. That's what I know best. But here's what I'd focus on, Mr. Customer, is it's not how fast we get this done that makes a difference. I mean, what'd you pay for this car? $30,000, $40,000, $50,000? I mean, it doesn't make any difference how fast we get it done, but what does make a difference and what is important is that when we get it done, you know it's done right by somebody who knew what they were doing and you won't have to worry about it. That's what you really want, right? I mean, what are they going to say?
Yeah.
You know, it's easiest thing to get.
Yeah, and I loved it, man. That's brilliant. That's pretty good.
It's what, you know, it goes back to the professional thing. It's what professionals do. I think you know, if you follow me online at all, that I broke my foot in October, and I'll never forget. I was such a jerk. I go to the doctor and I say, you know, I got to go out on the road, so I need you to get, you know, this taken care of, and I'm ready to go, you know, here in a week. And he says, well, that's good. And I'll do my best. But what we're looking at here is 4 weeks. And well, I can't do this in 4 weeks. So is there a different type of boot? Is there some, you know, accelerated physical therapy I can get in and all that stuff? And he says, that sounds like a good idea. Problem is, it doesn't exist because it doesn't work, because what it's going to take is 4 weeks. But I only have 2 weeks. But okay, well, that's cool. You only have 2 weeks, but it's going to be four. And that's what it was. I mean,
that's a good idea. It's going to take good stuff. Hey, man, thank you so much for coming back on. I really appreciate it. There's a question I wanted to ask you before I ask you my last question and give you some time to tell us a little bit more about you. But social media and fixed ops. Just high level, your takes on that. Should we start investing more time in that? Should we use it as a way to generate business? Maybe communicate to our current customers.
Yeah, this is something that's real interesting because social media is extremely it's extremely powerful, and it's something that I've not figured out 1,000% myself within my own company. But here's what I believe. I do believe there's value in being on there. I do believe, but I also believe if you're going to be using social media to reach your customers, make sure you have the right people delivering that social media, meaning within the dealership, the right messages going out there. Because, I'm in these different, let's just be candid with it. I'm in these different fixed operations groups and stuff, and there's just people on there all the time just nonstop talking over and over and over and over and over again. It's like, come on, you know? So I would have something very measured. I would do, things like maybe a weekly or a monthly podcast. Hey, it's January. We're soon going to be going to February. So what do you need to know about your car? You have somebody that can deliver something like that, that's got some style, that's got, makes it come across. And I just would very measured social media and make sure that it's very, very professional. It's not overkill, I guess, is where I'm at with it right now. It's a very fine line, mm-hmm. People like this stuff, but they don't want too much. I mean, it's one thing if I hear from my service advisor, hey, Merry Christmas. It's another thing if I'm hearing from him, two or three times a week. So I think there's going to be some value in it, but I think it has, and there is value, and I just think it has to be very measured. It has to be very professional, very controlled, very controlled. Cool.
I like that for sure. All right. So, there's always one question I ask everybody that comes on the show. But before we get to that, I wanted to give you a moment to tell us again about, your seminars and or your training, how can we get in touch with you, all that good stuff.
Okay. Well, here's some cool things going on. We work not only with car dealerships, but we work with the aftermarket as well. So let me just tell you a couple of events where people want to come and see us and not pay anything other than the admission to these events. There's the AutoWares convention going on in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the weekend of Valentine's Day, big, big event for aftermarket places. I'm going to be doing a full one-day workshop there for all the attendees. That's a big event. I'm going to be speaking this year at the NADA convention on the 15th or the 16th, 16th and 17th, Sunday and Monday, at the NADA convention in Las Vegas, which is in February. It's a cool event. It's a lot of fun to do. I think this will be my 23rd or 24th time speaking there. There are always great crowds and whatever, but got a big message I'm delivering there that people really need to hear if they're concerned about fixed ops. In addition to that, we've scheduled three workshops so far for the spring. We've got one in Chicago, Illinois, one in Indianapolis, Indiana, the other in Nashville, Tennessee. These are one-day workshops. We're going to show people how to get a 5/10 increase instantly on their service drive, how to get customer retention above 80% within 12 months, how to get an effective labor rate 92 to 95%. Within days, how to get perfect survey scores, and how to eliminate heat forever. Plus, they'll get over 200 word tracks in that workshop. We're also, we have our online training, some big things happening there. Couple of new books coming out. As a matter of fact, here in the next 2 weeks, you'll get the first. This one online is called "The Service Advisor's Bible to Closing Sales and Handling Objections." Expecting a lot of big stuff with that. But what we're most famous for is doing our service training on the service drive, and I have expert trainers that do that. The way you reach us for any of that stuff is simply dial 1-800-248-2931. 1-800-248-2931, and anybody that picks up that phone can help you get what you need. And I think I want to brag here about my staff. It's what we do is we've never had a dealer just like your customers that's been easier to get on board. And so it'd be very, very easy to take advantage of that. One thing I'm proud about with my staff is if they think that you can handle the concerns you have with a DVD set at $500, then they'll tell you that. If they think you can handle it with a one-day workshop or you can handle it with in-store training, they don't oversell. They get it done. So give us a call. We'd love to help you out.
Right on, man. Jeff, thank you so much, man, for coming on. Appreciate it. There is one question that I ask everybody that comes on, and that's, where do you see the automotive industry headed in the next 5 years and why? But you already answered that, so let's put a twist. Where do you see the automotive industry headed when it comes to fixed stops in the next 5 years and why?
this is the golden years. This is it. I mean, it could be the golden years if people continue down the path they did in 2019, realizing again that software, technology, and those tools have value to make you more efficient. But the silver bullet is your people, that we're still in a face to face, voice to voice contact mode. 86% of all sales are made that way. If you continue down that path, this could be the golden year. This could be the thing that changes and revolutionizes the auto industries forever, where we finally see that shift to fixed operations being the most important department because it is. So if the dealers continue with that mindset, this is the golden age. This is what we've been looking for the last 40 to 50 years. And even if the industry doesn't shift that way, as an individual, if you're sitting in a manager's chair, a fixed operations director's chair, a general manager's chair, dealer principal's chair, forget the rest of the industry. Do what you know is right for you and your people, and that is put the power in their hands. It's the power of communications to get this done. I think for both car sales and fixed ops, we're in for a 5 to 10 year run that's going to be unprecedented.
I totally agree, man, and I couldn't be happier to see fixed ops taking the place that it's always deserved, you know, within the space. So,
yeah, I think it's the number one most important department.
Absolutely, for sure. All righty, thanks again, Jeff. Always a pleasure, man. Appreciate your insights. That's all the time we have for today. If you haven't done so, please make sure to share this podcast, share this episode with somebody that can benefit from this information so that they can take it back to the dealership and implement it in their day-to-day. That's all we got. Thank you for tuning in. And as usual, we'll talk later.